around again, judging the profile of the land, seeking dead ground.
You realize that nobody's looking this way. No reason for them to bother. It'll be risky, but we can do it.
The line of trees grew thinner as Ryan picked the way between the stunted, twisted trunks. He'd seen enough plant malformation near hotspots throughout the Deathlands to recognize the effects of pollution on the pines. Branches had withered and died, and many of the needles were a sickly yellow color and brushed off against their clothes as he and Kate moved deeper into the heart of the valley. But there was still enough cover to pass the main workings without being observed. Once, Kate tripped and rolled toward the foaming water, only stopping herself by a desperate grab at a tangle of dead roots. Some snapped under her weight, some held.
Keep moving. Gotta get across as quick as we can.
The river was narrowing, but it was also moving more quietly, showing ominously deep swirls of green over some of the bigger boulders. Not far ahead, Ryan finally saw clearly what he'd only glimpsed from their earlier vantage point. At some time, probably a century or so ago, the railway had stretched farther up the canyon. Then, during the dark years after the long winters, the river had carried on its process of erosion and had undercut the iron rails. There'd been a bridge, a narrow wooden pontoon that crossed the rapids, but that had fallen, leaving a solid tangle of rusted metal and rotting, mangled timbers.
There.
I won't bother saying no, Ryan. You sure this is the best way?
It's the only way.
They moved along under the shelter of the trees, aware of the cliffs closing in on their right. By the time they reached the ruined bridge, the line of pines had diminished, but from there it was possible to see farther along the canyon. The river was no wider, but it was moving faster, whirling around jagged rocks that stuck their fangs above the white foam, and the valley narrowed until either side glistened with black ice. Ryan had to raise his voice above the noise of the torrent.
It's here or nowhere.
But they can still see us from back there. What if someone looks around when we're halfway across? What then, Ryan?
Then it'll be swimming time again.
Ryan went first. The trader had always warned that to move too fast was to draw attention to yourself. Ryan eased out of the trees, keeping himself hunched and small, walking straight to the end of the bridge, picking his way over the nest of warped rails. He quickly reached a point where he was out of sight of the set guards.
Now!
He beckoned for Kate to come and join him. She obeyed his instructions, keeping low, making sure she didn't stumble on the icy rocks, not turning her face toward the mine. When the young woman was concealed among the jumble of splintered timber, Ryan saw how pale she was.
You gonna make it?
Sure.
You don't look it. Fall off and someone will likely spot it. That way we both get chilled. I'm asking you again. Are you gonna make it?
I'm starving hungry, Ryan. I'd murder for a bowl of pork stew.
Hell, I know that. But can you make it over to there?
He pointed to the fragile spider web of corrosion and rust that dipped low over the river.
You going to cut my throat if I can't?
Ryan didn't answer, biting his lip in barely suppressed anger. Kate wiped her nose on her sleeve.
Let me go first. If I fall in, then they won't see you and you can still get out. You can find another way into the mines to save your little boy. I'll go first.
Ryan considered that. What the young woman said was true, and it took away any worries about having to chill her.
Okay.
Twice he thought she'd lost it. Once in the middle, her weight brought the old rails dropping within inches of the water. Her legs were crossed over the top of the reddened iron, thick-coated in ice, and she was finding it difficult to make any progress toward the far side. It crossed Ryan's mind to put a 9mm round through her skull. The corpse would float away from the segment, all of the noise would be effectively muffled by the 6 hours' built-in baffle silencer. But Kate kept control, waited a few moments, shepherding her strength. Then she kicked and wriggled toward the farther shore. She was within easy spitting distance when she lost her grip with her fingers, dropping head down, only her feet keeping her from the river and from death.
Fire blast.
Her dark hair was splashed with the spray of the raging water, her face away from Ryan. He could see her breathing hard, then almost feel the pain in her muscles as she swung herself up and forward, her fingers groping for a tenuous hold. Moments later, she was off the makeshift bridge, lying flat on her stomach among the heaped stones on the far side of the river.
Real ace on the line, lady.
He was across fast and easy, with only a single moment of danger. Ryan was heavier than the girl, and the rails dipped far more under his weight. He could feel the iron straining and hear some of the main timbers creaking. Ryan had chosen the same way of getting over, hanging frog-like, sliding with crossed feet and gloved hands. Despite his strength, There was nothing he could do as he felt himself slipping lower. The roar of the river filled his ears, and his skull seemed to swell with the pressure and the strain. He relaxed his head backward and immediately gulped in a mouthful of freezing green water. It ran into his nose and down into his lungs, nearly choking him. But he fought it and lifted his head again, clear of the torrent. Kate was frantically beckoning to him from her hiding place, and he nearly managed to smile at the irony of it. An irony that the young woman would never know. She was encouraging him, while he'd been prepared to put a bullet into her brain when their positions had been reversed.
So it goes.
He snaked over the last few feet and dropped down to safety.
They see us?
Ryan shook his head, showering her with drops of icy water.
No. Reckon we'd have heard it by now if they had.
The timing was right. The changing over of the night and day shifts was taking place, and it was, inevitably, a period of near chaos. One lot of workers, split into a dozen or more sections, was gut-weary, covered in stinking yellow mud, and frozen. The replacement shift had only just been roused, grudgingly, from their bunks in the packed, lousy dormitories. They were still half asleep, stumbling into one another, snapping like line camp curs. Both groups were hungry. Semyonian had altered the arrangements to try to improve efficiency, calculating that the same heating of gruel could suffice for both the finishing and the starting sections of slave workers. Now, great metal vats were bubbling over smoky fires near long tables. Dishes and spoons were heaped on the cold, snow-layered dirt. Filthy baskets contained hunks of bread. The turnover in laborers was so great that the Russian had never bothered to try to instigate any system of name checks or rotas. There was a count at the beginning and end of each shift, but he wasn't all that concerned if the numbers didn't match. Some died every day, their bodies tipped into worked-out shafts or heaved into the river, depending on where they were when life released its frail hold on them. Zemyanin was also aware that every now and again one or two of his captives would slip away from him. There was no wire fence, no electric arc lights, and no armed men scouring the country around. He knew the land for miles around his canyon. They may run, but they will not be able to eat, was his catchphrase.
We have to take care not to get in the same working group as the one you ran from.
Nobody knows anyone else.
How many in a gang?
Can't say. Varies a lot. Maybe 15 or 20, maybe more. One or two were lifted from the same place, and they stick together. Some are triple crazy, Ryan.
In what way?
You'll see.
They were within less than 40 paces of the nearest group of workers. All were dressed in a mix of furs and rags, and Ryan's only worry was that he might stand out as being dressed too well. The guards all stood with their own sections, watchful, holding their rifles at port, ready for any trouble. There was no sign of Dean, though Ryan kept looking for him. He saw mainly adults, with hardly anyone under top teens. The sky had darkened, and a few flakes of snow were beginning to drift down into the sheltered valley, carried on a leaden northerly wind. Kate gently touched Ryan's stubbly skin with a gloved finger.
You got ice all over your face and hair.
Ryan was aware of the way the river water had begun to freeze in his long black hair, tangling into tiny balls of ice. He'd cleared his nostrils, but there was a patina of ice around his cheeks and down over his prominent chin.
What do we do now?
Food serving's going on. The lot nearest us hasn't eaten yet. Everyone's looking the other way.
Just walk up and join in? What if the Sekmen see us?
They won't.
You sure?
Positive.
Kate glanced around, then reached up and quickly kissed him on the lips.
I believe you, Ryan. Don't know why, but I do.
That's good. Let's do it.
Ryan's hand was gripping the holstered blaster, now hidden under the long coat.
Now?
Why not?
Christy Roth finished off the last of the smoked ham and potato pie, wiping her mouth with a linen napkin. She placed knife and fork neatly together on the plate, pushing it to the middle of the table.
Your turn to do the dishes, Jack.
Jack grinned at her.
Want coffee? Put on the stove already. Doc?
Please.
A steaming brew of finest Java would bring tears to the eyes of a plaster saint and make an old man very happy.
Where's Christina?
Jack was clearing the table, the morning sun lancing through the thin blue curtains on the eastern wall of the cabin, turning his white hair to a star.